Und herzlich willkommen hier beim Geheimnis des Tees. Schön, dass du wieder dabei bist. Und heute habe ich einen speziellen Gast für euch. Und zwar habe ich hier Don von Mayleaf. Ich freue mich riesig, dass er sich die Zeit für mich genommen hat. Und ich habe ja auch Fragen von euch gesammelt. Die habe ich hier vorbereitet und die werde ich ihm gleich stellen. Und ja, let's go. Ich werde natürlich wieder die Sprache switchen, weil Deutsch ist jetzt nicht so sein Spezialgebiet. Deswegen werden wir einmal wieder ins Englische gehen. Genau. So, welcome, Don. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you here. And thank you for taking time for us and for my...
Thank you so much, Inga. It's a pleasure to share a session with you. What are you drinking today?
I'm starting with Badashan Shang.
Nice.
I have this cake. And for the Badashan, I have a question later for you as well, because I bought your Badashan as well. And but later for this. I wanted you so much for this interview because I'm watching your videos. And when you like to dive more into tea, there is no way around you. You can do whatever you want, but you always find a way to your videos and to your things. But what I'm really interested in, how did you start your way of tea? How did the tea finds you, or find do you find the tea? How does it happen?
Okay, so the story really begins with my family. So my father and mother in the 1970s started a bookshop called East Asia Company. Mm-hmm. And that bookshop was primarily, well, only to deal with importing books from China and art from China and selling it. So it was an arts bookshop. Mm-hmm. And then that developed, and there was more and more interest in Chinese medicine. And eventually my father became a professor in Chinese medicine and opened the first clinic in the UK for Chinese medicine. And so this is the backdrop that I grew up in. And everything in my whole childhood was, my mother is from Switzerland, my father was from China. And so it was all about this sort of cross-cultural exchange, mm-hmm. this idea of bridging East and West, this idea of taking culture and knowledge and wisdom and ideas from the East and sharing them to the West. And not just sharing, but also reformatting them, maybe, you know, mm-hmm. translating mm-hmm. them, making them more relevant to the Western ears and mind, because there are some very distinct differences in the way that we operate, and tea actually has a lot to do with
definitely later. I'm always talking about it. And what are you really what are you doing?
I'm actually working, so sorry Inga, but I have to do sample tasting. So I've got three black teas from Yunnan, and I know nothing about them, although I can sort of guess what they are a little bit from the way they look. But yeah, I'm just sample tasting. I'm always sample tasting. So I grew up in that environment. I went off and I studied sciences, and then I switched, and in my university years I studied film and television and got really into photography, hence why I enjoy doing the videos, etc. And then I came back to London because I studied in New York, and I came back to London, and as a very responsible eldest Chinese son, I helped out in the business, basically doing some design work, a bit of marketing here and there. But then I saw an opportunity, and I thought, well, you know, we deal in Chinese medicine, we deal in acupuncture and Chinese medicine, and we had lots of books, and we were running courses, and the whole other side of the business, which I'm involved in. But tea is the first Chinese medicine. And we were currently stocking pretty low quality, bog standard jasmine green teas. And, you know, I think the most it got to was a dragon pearl here or there. Yeah. And so I thought that there might be an opportunity. I knew nothing about tea. And I spoke to my family about it. And I said, you know, why don't we try to improve our tea offerings, at least for our clients? And also, as more people come in and drink tea, they'll learn more about Chinese culture, and you know, that could help other parts of our business. So basically provide a ramp into the business, because mm-hmm. you know, for somebody to walk through a door to come and have acupuncture, Chinese, you know, and Chinese medicine, it requires a certain, you know, leap of faith, let's say. And I think that we wanted to just sort of generate a more friendly sort of environment. So I went off and I studied a little bit, went to China. And then, as you know, most of us have been through, there was that moment where you just think, oh, what have I been missing my whole life? Mm-hmm. Bear in mind that I've been brought up in the UK drinking, you know, English tea my whole life.
Yes.
So, you know,
I know that.
I thought that I knew
English
about tea
breakfast.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Exactly. Earl Grey's English breakfast,
yep,
et cetera.
Perfect.
I fell into the rabbit hole, and I've never surfaced from that rabbit hole, and I just continue to explore. So it just was a natural sort of flow, but it was never meant to be something that was going to take over my life. It was meant to be maybe I learned for a couple of years and I helped the family business improve their tea offerings, and then I get on with other things in my life. But yeah, tea hooked me.
Mm. What were the first tea that really catches you? So these tea that you think this is what, there's something more. Tea is not only tea, jasmine tea or green tea or this cheap stuff. What was the first tea where you find out that there is maybe something more behind?
Well, I think that like a lot of people, a good Tie Guan Yin, and it probably wasn't even good at the time, but you know, a decent Tie Guan Yin, yep, is always a little bit surprising if all that you've been drinking your whole life is black teas and maybe some sort of green teas and mm-hmm. some relatively commodity grade green teas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do remember being quite excited by the taste, but the tea that really actually like stopped me in my tracks actually is mm-hmm. probably one of these teas. It was a Dianhong. It was mm-hmm. a golden bud. And I was not, I mean, obviously I enjoyed the taste, etc., but I was mesmerized by the texture of the tea, mm-hmm. the smoothness of the tea. Again, I'd been brought up around Assams and mm-hmm. Ceylons and, you know, yeah. and that very sort of aggressive or a little bit more aggressive Assamica varieties. But when I tasted an Assamica that was super smooth, that was a moment. I remember a key shift in my sort of head, like going, oh, this is not just me doing something to help the business. I'm mm. going to really enjoy this process now, you mm. know? And yeah, it really struck me. So I would say it was a Dianhong that really sort of launched me into the rabbit hole.
This is one thing I learned from you, and that also the texture is very important. And before, I did not put my attention on it. So, but when I'm looking back to my tea story, so I would say that tea was a big teacher for me. Teacher, it says everything for me. Could you say that tea was, what is tea doing to your personality? Who was you before and how did you grow over the time with the tea? Is there something, or you would say, oh, no?
I certainly wouldn't say no. It's very difficult to know how much of that development would have happened naturally without tea, mm-hmm. of course, but I don't really have any doubts that tea mm-hmm. has heavily influenced the way that I look at the world and the way that I look at life. I would say that tea teaches many different things. Primarily, it is excellent training in presence. And I think that that's something that it's sort of like an amazing hack that you can, because a lot of people find it difficult to meditate or difficult to find that, you know, no mind, yeah. you know, or free mm-hmm. their mind. Yeah. And focusing on some sort of organic, non-digital centerpiece around which you involve all of your senses and your memory, and you are encouraged to have lateral thinking and free association, is a very powerful thing, I think. And and I think that that's part of the draw of why people love the tea experience so much. Mm. I think tea has brought me closer to nature, I would
yeah.
say.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm. I'm a city boy. I was born in London and studied in New York, you know, so like I love cities. I love the excitement of cities. I love, you know, I love the accessibilities of cities. Mm. And I've never sort of associated myself as somebody who you know, wants, craves to go out in nature, you know, and spend months out in nature. I've always sort of missed the city and wanted to go back. And I think that tea has given me a real appreciation, not just appreciation, but a passion for the way that the natural world works. I think that it also filters into my family business as well around natural medicine. And I think that, you know, it has taught me to be more appreciative of certain things that as a child, maybe I took for granted, or I sort of, you know, it was just part of my day-to-day life. And I think one of the key aspects of tea in my later years, as I'm an old man now, is to cultivate. I'm fully grown. It's cultivated a sense of pause. What I mean by that is the power of doing nothing, the power of pause, the power of stillness, the power of the Taoist would say Wu Wei, the idea strategic passivity, wait. Don't always rush in, because I, and you probably pick this up from the videos, I'm a little bit in your face. I tend to be quite, you know, active. I just want to do things. I want to get done. I want to, like, you know, I'm excited about the next thing, the next project. What are we doing? You know, my staff will tell you that sometimes that can get a bit exhausting. And, you know, I think that tea teaches that rushing in is oftentimes the wrong thing to do, and actually pausing and waiting allows things to unlock in your life in a more organic, more natural way, and opportunities present themselves, and just to have a little bit more faith that those opportunities will present themselves rather than force issues. These are just a few of the things that that tea has changed. I mean, I could go on and on and on.
Normally there are a lot of things. At the beginning, you say that tea is also medicine, but there are two ways. The Western culture, you drink tea when you're sick. In China, you drink tea always to just be vital, to be healthy. So when you're sick, then something is wrong. So you lost something. Because my audience always ask me, how do I use tea as a medicine? And I always say, for me, tea is a drink all the day, but it's not medicine. But how would you explain that? Is tea medicine, really medicine, when you're sick?
So first of all, you raise a very important point, which is that in ancient times in China, doctors were paid when their village was well. And when patients got ill, their pay was deducted. And I think that it's an interesting model, because it's an upstream model. It's a model of prevention. It's a model of trying to take responsibility for your health rather than sort of being a patient, you know? And I think that that's an important mind shift that a lot of people, I think, are making and continue to and needs to continue to make,
especially these days.
Precisely, yeah. I do see tea as a medicine. I absolutely see tea as a medicine. It is a medicine. It's a medicinal herb. I don't think that there's any question about that. I think that one of the tricky things, and one of the reasons why a lot of people shy away from talking about the medicinal aspects of tea, is because of the fact that they don't want to be seen to be selling tea on the basis of some sort of miracle result. You know, in other words, you drink this and you're going to lose whatever 10 kilos and, you know, all of that stuff, right?
And I use it for my blog. I think that always.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that, you know, it has become a trigger for many people. And I understand why, because, you know, you don't want to be making wild claims. However, I think that in a way, the balance has amongst, let's say, the tea community, and I use that word relatively broadly, but, you know, you understand what I mean. I think there tends to be a, like, oh, don't talk about the health and benefits of tea, because you might get, like, tainted and painted as one of those people that sells on the basis of health and making wild claims and accusations fakery. But I think that my personal opinion is we've gone too far. I think that tea, I mean, you can look at Victor Preedy's book on clinical studies on tea. I mean, it's that thick with 6-point font of hundreds of clinical studies. There are thousands and thousands of clinical studies that demonstrate the health effects of tea, positive health effects of tea.
Definitely, yeah, it is.
So you can't say that tea is not medicinal. Mm. I think it would be actually a disservice to people to say that, because that's not true. Tea is very healthy. The problem starts to arise when you start to try to isolate which teas do which things.
Oh, yeah.
And what are the mechanisms behind those positive health attributes?
Yeah.
And that's where we run into problems.
Yeah, there are a lot of stories. There are a lot of studies when the scientist extracts something from the tea and just take this as a medicine. But in my opinion, the tea is a whole thing. You just cannot extract something and throw the other away, and then it's not working that way anymore as it should.
Right, and you raise one of the most fundamental points around the differences in the medical approach between let's call it conventional medicine and traditional medicines or sort of heirloom medicines, and that is that Western medicine or conventional medicine likes to try to find an active compound and therefore can equate a mechanistic reaction. So that causes X in a test tube and then is proved in vivo in a person.
Yeah.
Whereas most traditional medicines didn't have the advantage of, you know, all of the different technology that conventional medicine has, and worked on the basis of whole plant medicine and synergy, the idea that it's not just the synergy of one plant, but actually combining 2, 3, 12, 20 plants creates this incredible synergistic response, where even if you've got some toxicity in certain plants, they are controlled by other things, because toxicity and a pharmacological effect are the same thing for the most part. It's just a matter of dosage, right? Yeah. So if it has a pharmacological effect, it could potentially become toxic. And certainly if you drink too much tea, it's not a great thing for you, right?
Yeah,
but the upper limit is very high. So the problem that we have is that everyone is looking for evidence on the basis of
numbers.
Exactly. It's valid, absolutely great if we can do it. I'm not saying it's not great, but it is also short-sighted and myopic to say that that is the only way that you gather evidence. And I think that we need to have a little bit more trust in experience and knowledge and the idea of, you know, generations studying and learning and observing, that it shouldn't be like, oh, well, those 2000 years get thrown in the bin because there isn't a double blind placebo study that proves X and shows the mechanism behind it. And that's one of the big problems that we have, not just in tea, but in food and in medicine in general.
There's one thing, this is a short time solution, and then there's a long term, because for traditional medicine, you need to, there's not a result. There's not a result now. You have to take it long time. There's a promotion in a TV. There's a young woman is doing the smoothie, a green smoothie, and doing something for her health. And then her friend came and just have a little spray, vitamin spray. And she said, oh, why are you doing so much work? I have this spray. And now I have all my vitamins. But this is a good example of how the people see the world. And with tea, you need to be patient, as you said. And maybe the way, you have to trust in yourself. You have to find out, you have to find out what is the tea doing for you. For example, me, I'm in the, now I cannot drink any green tea. For me, it's not possible. I'm really, my stomach is crumping, I'm getting headache. But just when the weather changed, this is not, you cannot see it outside, but my body can feel it. Then I start to drink green tea and I cannot explain it. And I can get, not give you numbers why it is like that, but it is.
Well, I mean, you say you can't explain it, but what you're saying is you can't explain it according to a certain limited view yeah. of how you would explain the biochemistry of your body, right? Yeah. And the fact is that from a Chinese medicine or a traditional medicine viewpoint, that makes perfect sense
yeah.
because you are not isolated from your environment.
Yeah.
You are continuously in communication with your environment. Your environment is continuously affecting you, and that you work on the basis that you are a landscape. Your body and your health, your mental, emotional, and physical health is a landscape that needs to be tended. And just like any garden, the seasons will affect it. And you're looking for signs and you're looking for symptoms and you're looking for individual answers to how you can resolve certain issues or to improve your health. And that individual approach, that system-based approach, is something which is inevitable. It's inevitably going to become more and more prominent in conventional medicine. It's just very difficult because you have a lot of people that resist that that way of moving, because there's a certain sense or a certain message being put out there that that's unscientific. And I think that that whole question of what's unscientific and what is scientific needs a fresh debate, but that's a whole Definitely. Other discussion.
Yeah, that is a whole coming back to your teas. So I bought this Badashan, and we also made a first impression on Instagram. Maybe you saw that in German with Mike, and we had a lot of gabas and ordered some samples.
Oh yeah,
and I loved yeah. it because I can order samples. Sometimes I'm not sure if I like the tea or if I can handle the tea, because some teas, and I don't know what is it about the Badashan. I tell you my story with the Badashan. So I don't like shangpuers. Shangpuers is these strange things, and it's crumping my stomach, going through my head. And I don't know what I don't like them. So I never come close to shampoos. And then there was a point that someone gave me some samples from Badashan. And this is a totally different world for me. I can't handle it. And see, those cakes, the whole cake over here, I finish in 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
impressive.
That is. And I found out that I really can drink it. That wakes me up. That brings me in time. But I also like the taste so much. So that's why I was so happy that you have this Gushu from Bada. And I also can drink it because it's a Malta, right?
So yeah.
Normally Malta and we are not friends. But this one, really, I can drink it. And yeah, about the package, we don't need to talk about the package because I'm so happy about the package. You can just make these things and put it on your box, and I love it.
I'm glad you found it. A lot of people haven't found that trick that we put on.
I was so happy about
that little arrow.
I was so happy about it. Also, the other packages, it's so amazing. So, what is it with Badashan? Do you have any experience, because you have this Badashan now here, but you also tried other, I think, or?
Yeah, and they all tend to have a similar theme to it, which is certainly, I want to say gentle, but it still has potency and has Definitely. Fragrance, but it Yep. just is, it's a little bit more of a calmer area. And it goes to show, you know, once again, the importance of terroir and the microgenetics of certain areas. Certainly, they tend to be more gentle, smoother. They tend to, I would say, bring a little bit more starch and herbal notes to a tea. And I really love that, especially for morning times, you know, when I don't want anything my stomach is just waking up, you know, I don't want anything too aggressive.
Normally with a shang, right? Normally, all the other, you cannot drink it in the morning, but this is totally possible.
Well, you have to understand my stomach is a bit cast iron. I drink all teas all the time. But yes, I mean, I'm particularly masochistic with my body because I've got samples to get through. But no, if given the choice, I would certainly select a more gentle tea, shangpua. I wouldn't normally pick in the morning, and bada is definitely, you know, a really interesting area for that, for those more gentle teas.
Yeah, I just took the cake. I was in Prague Praha this year on the tea festival, and I prepared a tea for the audience, and I had this cake with me, and there are a lot of people came to me and say, shampoo, I don't like it. And then they drink it and I said, wow, what is this? And yeah, so this is something really for beginners or for people like me or more.
I mean, I tend to avoid the beginners and connoisseur argument, because I think that it can feel a bit hierarchical. It's not, you know, and also oftentimes beginners dive into some teas that are absolutely I would consider wild and crazy, you know, and vice versa. Bada is an excellent area for producing a certain type of tea, and the celebration of the different areas in Yunnan. Long may that continue, that you have this diversity. My fear is that you're going to have too much of a sort of a trend where people go, I want teas that are like that. And everyone, even in Bada, is going to be trying to produce teas that are like that. And it should always be as diverse as possible so that, you know, we've got that variety.
Yeah. But definitely there seems to be a difference in this region that makes a tea really interesting. And I bought some cakes and I all liked them. There was nothing, but maybe it was a...
Have you tried any shangpua from Myanmar?
No, not yet.
You might be interested to try those, because in my sort of experience, they might be a bit rougher, a little bit less refined, but they tend to have that a similar style where it's a gentler, smoother brew.
Okay. Let's come to the question of the audience, because it's a good way to dive in.
I'm sure they're going to test me.
No, that is not. So my audience, and I'm focusing on beginners, because I want to show this way of tea brewing. As you said, it's a perfect way to calm down, to relax, to stay in the present. And there's a lot of meditation outside, but there I found out that there are also a lot of people who struggle with meditation because they cannot find the stillness. And so tea is a perfect way. And so I'm focusing, so my target group is more the beginners, so to let them into the tea and find out what it is possible to taste. By the way, how do you taste so much things out of the tea? what are you doing? Chestnut cream. I never tried chestnut cream. How do you find out this chestnut cream? What do I have to do to taste all those things?
It's a combination of being greedy and eating and drinking everything that gets put in front of you, so that you build up a memory of flavors. But secondly, and most importantly, not being afraid to free associate. I think one of the biggest problems that a lot of people have is they're too worried about getting the right or wrong answer.
Yeah, that's true.
And it doesn't, for me, like, yeah. Tasting is something that comes from the memory, and it just it appears in my head and I say it. And I think the only difference between me and other people is that I'm not afraid to say it.
Yeah, this is quite interesting that you say it. There's a taste memory. So when I'm tasting tea, I see more colors. So I think this is more darker and this is more light. So this is very lightweight. But the taste memory is very interesting that you speak about it, because when I start in the morning and try to choose my tea, I select my tea from the taste memory. And now when I'm thinking about the green tea, the whatever, Longjing, then my body starts to crump and I said, okay, this is not the right tea. And then I just select the teas and have the memory behind, and then I know what I need.
Yeah, that's a good way to select teas. I think that, I guess the overall takeaway is being instinctive is a very important part of tea. And I think that...
teaching as well, from a tea as well.
Huh? Yeah, it is. It teaches you to trust your instincts, to follow your instincts. And it's amazing how it tends to be the right decision, or, you know, it tends to be the right flavor note that comes out. So, I think that, it's just about being instinctive and not engaging the brain too much. Yeah. Again, the focus on trying to calm the mind a little bit.
Yeah. So let's start with a question. What was the best tea you had in the last years, or you drink in the last years? Not the last year, because you're trying a lot of teas. So can you point it?
The best tea that I've tried in the last year?
Years.
Well, we've just finished our Tea of the Year video. This is sort of fresh in my mind because I had to torture myself to try to go through all the teas that I selected that, you know, I love the most. Playground Rendezvous is my tea of 2021. That's a kombucha fermented shupua, which I really, really love. So that's a gushu pua, which is barrel fermented with a black tea kombucha. And it's unique, it's interesting, I think it's amazing taste and very unique. So that's my tea of this year. I mean, it's sort of a difficult, well, it's a very difficult question, but the question is difficult because on average, I taste around 900 to 1,000 teas every year.
I know.
And we select about 90. And at any one point, I guess the question is, which tea made you the most excited when you first tasted it? I mean, I really was amazed by a Zhu Ye Qing green tea this year, Bamboo Sabre, which came and went out of stock. And Bai Lu Gold, also a really incredible black tea from Sichuan. So I've been really into Sichuan teas this year.
I was in Sichuan. I was a Mongding teas. I really prefer because I was there. Just saw this picture here is made in Mongding. Here you see the tea fields and the dust from the tea fields. And I was there and I have made it big to remind myself.
So you're always sipping next to the plants. I mean, those are the ones that I pick off my head right now. But, you know, I mean, there are so many. There are so many. And it's just that's what keeps me addicted to this job, is that I always know that there's going to be a new tea to taste.
Yeah.
Or lots of new teas to taste. And there's going to be some surprises.
This is also a good thing when you think about that this harvest will never come back. So this makes you sad, maybe. But on the other hand, there will be a new one to taste. And maybe it's good, maybe it's not good, but you have to find out. So this is the curiosity I have for the tea every year. And sometimes there's a story. I was in Hangzhou and I went there through a small tea shop, and the woman wasn't very friendly. She asked me, "Yao Mai Shuma, you want to buy something?" and I said, "I don't know. What do you have?" But she had an amazing Tea Guan Yin. When it comes to Tea Guan Yin, I like the traditional style. So it has to be a little bit roasted. It has to be more oxidized, because otherwise it's too green. It's not round. And then it's crumbing my stomach. And I bought just a little bit of this. And then I drink it. When you have enough from a tea, you're very free to drink it. But when it comes to an end, and I just have one portion of this, and there was a special time. I booked the next flight to China, and then I drank it. But it was so sad, and I didn't know if I ever find a tea like that again. And of course, I did not find this tea, but I find a lot of other teas. So sad that things are gone, to let go, but also happy to find out what's coming next. This is a good again, message tea gives us.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the key teachings that tea gives you. Never the same. Impermanence is a part of life. Everything is going to end, and there'll always be new beginnings.
It's always a cycle.
Everything through the symbolism of the tea that you're drinking, to the way that you brew, and the way, you know, the sort of enactment of life in the single tea session, from rehydrating until you steep it until its end. It's an important lesson that we all need to unfortunately learn. You know, it's that thing, you've got to accept impermanence. But yeah, and also it keeps me in my job. Because if it all tasted the same, then I wouldn't have to have to taste every year. So true. I'm thankful for that as well.
Yeah, true. So what was the best tea place, or where is an unusual place you had a cup of tea?
Unusual place I've had a cup of tea.
Tea house, nature, roof, top of roof.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the most bizarre.
The most weird place.
I've had tea like on top of mountains and you know, I've had tea on boats before, like going along Wuyi Mountain. You know, they have these kind of touristy things where they bring you down, and we were with tea suppliers, and I remember having, like, that's something that I'm not used to, it's unusual for me, is having a gongfu ceremony, you know, on a boat, or not a boat, like a little canoe, you know, so you're sort of there, like, with your little gongfu session. I guess, you know, the most magical moments for me are having teas with the farmers.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
In their homes, freshly made, just straight out, you know, and it might even be a bit rough because it hasn't had time to, you know, mature, but it just is has a remarkable vibrancy to to watch tea being picked and then processed and then land in your gaiwan. I think that tends to be the most magical moments for me, that when you see that journey and you drink that tea with the farmers, and it might be just like, you know, a household, and that tends to be my most enjoyable times.
I had those moments as well. That is really, really interesting also how they do the tea. And I remember that there was one farmer, just they dry the tea and then they give us a tea, and the green tea, and made the Lauren Cha, the glass with the tea inside, and we drank it. And then he came up at the end, he came up with a small box, very small box, and he said, okay, this is my tea, let's have my tea, because he selected it before this special moment when he came up with his special tea and brewed it for us. That was amazing.
There is nothing like the excitement of somebody pulling out something from their private collection.
Yeah, definitely.
when you know that their life is around tea, and then this is their, like, prized tea, it is a real privilege to get to share that, for sure.
Do you only drink your own teas, or you also drink privately drink teas from other suppliers? Or are you so happy with your selection that you don't look around?
No, I would love to taste. I'm always happy to taste teas from wherever and whoever. The thing is that my house is overflowing with samples. So
I cannot open the cupboard, otherwise it's going off.
You know, I literally have entire wardrobes filled with not just samples, but samples that I liked so much that I decided to keep, you know, and so it just is a matter of capacity, time and capacity. I taste so many samples during the day, and then obviously I need to taste the teas that arrive from, you know, the ones we've selected, and then, you know, doing tasting notes, etc., that there's just not enough hours in the day, really. Having said that, a lot of people will, well, some people will gift me teas. So they'll say, oh, I bought this tea from this vendor or that vendor, you should try it. And I'm like, I love that because I get to taste what, you know, other people are sourcing. Mm. And it gives me a certain sort of, you know, albeit narrow, it gives me a certain view of, you know, what their style is, et cetera. Mm. And I'm very happy to taste it, but I don't go out and, you know, buy lots of tea from other places to see what the competitors are doing.
Yeah.
I don't really have the time to do that. Nothing against tasting it. I would love to continue to taste other people's teas. And I think that there is a sort of weirdly perceived competition between certain brands that I don't think is necessarily the case. I think that, you know, everyone's doing their thing and long may it
definitely
continue.
Definitely. And everyone is specialized in something. This is also what I always say. So if you don't like me, you will not come to me and learn Guhuta. And the people who likes you come to you. But some people don't like you, then they come to me. So this is a personal thing. And we have enough population on this earth to share this world together and to get the people into the tea. Because that's
and that's
mission.
The point. The point yeah. is exactly is try to get as many people to fall in love with tea as possible, and not any one person or any one seller is going to be able to do that. You know, so yeah, you're absolutely right. Variety is the spice of life. It's got to be the case. And people don't like my videos or don't like me, that's fine. Do your thing.
Don't need to watch.
Far. Yeah, exactly.
It's perfectly fine. This YouTube, you can just shut down.
Yeah, exactly.
This is perfect. Yeah, this is what I mean. There's one last question. How long does it take for your giveaways? You really, every year, you make such great giveaways, a journey, and I'm just watching it a little bit, but how do you get the idea? And how long is the process to finish that? I'm sure you're not doing that alone. You have a lot of people to help you out, right? Or am I wrong? Maybe.
Well, it's the answer to your question. I'm happy that somebody asked this because it's something that I don't often talk about. It consumes my evenings. You know, so for example, this latest game that we've done, the States of Self one. I started thinking about it in January this year and wanted to do a game that that symbolized, you know, the choices that we can make in our life. We're going to be presented with all sorts of things externally, but, you know, the way that we internalize them or the way that we frame them is the fundamental choice that we have and leads to either sort of positive outcomes or less positive outcomes. But trying to take that quite vague idea and apply it to something that was structured is very difficult. I have two people that then help me with the tech. Mm. They are usually putting their hair out by sort of October time because I'm like, right, here's the idea. I want you to do this, 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 this. And they're like, oh my God, how? And it is quite stressful, I have to say, because, you know, when you're doing something that involves new technology or not new technology, but like trying to launch something that's untested and you're releasing it to the entire tea community and go, it's sort of like it's like testing live. And so it is very stressful. We've got our final clue drop this Saturday. And this morning, I was panicking with the dev team, just kind of going, is it going to work? Is the countdown going to work? Is it going to, you know, is the clue going to drop properly? You know, so it is stressful and probably but what it boils down to is it's something that I like the idea and I want to see it brought to fruition. And I think that pretty much sums up the way that I approach everything is, I like an idea, let's try and make it happen.
But I love the idea. The idea behind it is amazing. It's really amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
But it took you a whole year to find the idea or to put into structure. There was
there was lots of ideas. There was lots of ideas of how do I want to say this? And, you know, and also you've got to be careful because you don't want to be too preachy about anything, you know, and so just finding the right line. There were loads of different possibilities and avenues, and then we found we hit development walls where it's like, no, that's technically not possible. Okay, regroup, let's find something new. And then you've got to do all the work because, you know, with these states of self websites, there's lots of footage. So I had to go out with cameras and film it all and edit it and work out how, you know, it all works together and try to find the music. And so it became this long project, but, you know, it sort of occupies my evenings. You know, my daughter goes to bed and it's, I don't know, it's sort of 10 o'clock at night. And then my brain starts to kind of whir and go, okay.
It's not sleeping in the evening.
Yeah.
Not calming down. Yeah. Thank you. So when the people now, as usual, I put the website below in the comments and so on. So when the people try, is there, so my, because I'm focusing on beginners, so they not have anything to do with tea. Do you have three tips how to start to taste teas or to dive into Kung Fu Cha or to explore the world of tea? Three tips.
Okay.
I think there are more, but
definitely. Well, the first thing, of course, is finding good tea. And that's not an easy thing to do necessarily. Look for sellers that focus primarily on non-scented teas, on pure teas. I think one of the big giveaways of, you know, or one of the easiest ways to separate, one of the easiest ways to be more probable to get good quality tea, I've got to be careful what I say, is to look for websites or tea sellers that focus on pure teas rather than scented teas. You know, 10% of their catalog scented teas, fine. But if 50, 60% of their catalog is scented teas, then I would probably advise that you go elsewhere. And also, as part of that same tip, make sure that the seller is at least making the effort to talk about location and cultivar. You know, because, you know, it's like going into a wine shop and seeing red Italian. You know, you want to know, is this a Chianti and where's it from? So I think that finding good tea, and those would be the tips around that. Second thing would be obviously brewing with enough leaf to water ratio. You know, you don't want to just put a sprinkle of leaf in and, you know, a lot of water. And you can talk about Gong Fu Cha, you can talk about the different styles, etc. But ultimately, when it boils down to it, you could just get a bowl, you can just throw in a load of leaves and put water, but just make sure you put enough water in, enough leaf in there, so that you're going to get a rich brew. Otherwise, you're not going to get what you need out of it. And then lastly, last tip is trust your instincts and don't be influenced by whether or not something should be high or low quality or good or bad. The whole point of the tea journey is it's a personal one. Definitely. And you may drink a tea at the beginning and think it's amazing, and then in 5 years look back and go, oh, I don't like that tea anymore. That could happen.
This is a part of the process.
Yeah, but if you are enjoying that tea now, then enjoy that tea now. And the most important thing is have faith in your own taste and trust your instinct, and that is going to motivate you to build a personal relationship with the tea and explore further with enthusiasm, rather than say, well, what should it be or what shouldn't it be? Or, you know, is this high, is this low? You know, it sort of becomes a bit, you start to become a disciple rather than, you know, somebody who's has autonomy over their tea experience. So off the top of my head, those three.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being there and having a cup of tea with me. Also, you're not drinking, but I'm drinking.
No, I've been sipping. Unfortunately, none of these black teas make it, so I'm going to cross them off, but you know, they were okay.
Okay. Then thank you for being here and taking your time with us. As I said, all the details where to find you are put in the description box below. Oh, my frog is speaking, and also the YouTube channel, so that you can find all the tips and also this amazing zipping and also this description of the tea. It's always amazed me and I love to watch the videos, and then I also zip the tea and I try to find it, but it's harder for me to try to find those things. Yeah, thank you for being there.
Thank you, Inga. It's a pleasure.